Chapter 14. Message from the Mahel. A mile west of the ridge, the camps began. Men and horses in cook fires, wind-flailed banners and a few scattered tents, clumped by nationality, by house. Each camp a lake of churned mud, separated from the others by stretches of brushy heath. Men mounted and afoot watched Rand's streaming banners pass and peered toward other camps to gauge reactions. When the Aiel had been present, these men had made a single, huge camp, driven together by one of the few things they truly shared in common. They were not Aiel, and feared them, however much they denied it. The world would die unless he succeeded, but he had no illusions that they shared any loyalty to him, or ever believed that the fate of the world could not be made to accommodate their own concerns, their own desires for gold or glory or power. A handful did, perhaps, a bare handful— but for the most part they followed because they feared him far more than they did the Aiel. Maybe more than they did the Dark One, in whom some did not really believe, not in the depths of their hearts, not that he could and would touch the world harder than he had already. Rand stood before their faces, and they believed in that. He accepted it, now. He had too many battles ahead of him to waste effort on one he could not win. So long as they followed and obeyed, it had to be enough. The largest of the camps was his own, and here Ilioner companions in green coats with yellow cuffs rubbed shoulders with Tyran defenders of the stone in fat-sleeved coats, striped black and gold, and an equal number of Kariennin drawn from 40-odd houses in dark colors, some with khan stiff above their heads. They cooked at different fires, slept apart, picketed their horses apart, and eyed one another warily, but they mingled. The safety of the Dragon Reborn was their responsibility, and they took the job seriously. Any of them might betray him, but not while the others were there to watch. Old hatreds and new dislikes would bring betrayal of any plot before the betrayer stopped to think. A ring of steel stood guard around Rand's tent, a huge, peaked thing of green silk embroidered all over with bees in thread of gold. It had belonged to his predecessor, Matin Stepanaeus, and had come with the crown, in a manner of speaking. Companions in burnished conical helmets stood side by side with defenders in helmets ridged and rimmed, and Kariennin in bell-shaped helms, ignoring the wind, barred face guards hiding their features, halberds slanted precisely. No one moved a hair when Rand drew rein, but a bevy of servants came running to attend to him and the Ashaman. A bony woman in the green and yellow vest of a groom from the royal palace in Ilion took his bridle, while his stirrup was held by a bulbous-nosed fellow in the black and gold livery of the Stone of Tyr. They tugged forelocks to him, and cast only one sharp look at one another. Barina Karavin, a stout, pale little woman, in a dark dress, self-importantly offered him a silver tray of damp cloths from which steam rose. Kariennin, she watched the other two, though more as if making sure they did their tasks properly than with the animosity for each other they barely hid. But with care, still. What worked with the soldiers worked with the servants as well. Drawing off his gauntlets, Rand waved away Borina's tray. Damer Flynn had risen from an ornately carved bench in front of the tent as Rand dismounted. Bald, except for a ragged white fringe, Flynn looked more a grandfather than an Ashaman. A leather-tough grandfather with a stiff leg who had seen more of the world than a farm. The sword at his hip looked as if it belonged, as well it should on a former soldier of the Queen's Guard. Rand trusted him more than most. Flynn had saved his life, after all. Flynn saluted, fist to chest, and when Rand acknowledged him with a nod, limped closer and waited until the grooms left with the horses before speaking in a low voice. "Torval's here. Sent by the Mahel," he says. "He wanted to wait in the council tent. I told Narishma to watch him." That had been Rand's command, though he was not sure why he had given it. No one who came from the Black Tower was to be left alone. Hesitating, Flynn fingered the dragon on his black collar. "He wasn't happy to hear you'd raised all of us."
"Wasn't he now?" Rand said softly, tucking his gloves behind his sword belt.
And because Flynn still looked uncertain, he added, "You all earned it." He had been about to send one of the Ashaman to Taim, the leader, the Mahel, as the Ashaman all called him. But now Torval could carry the message. In the council tent?
"Have refreshments sent," he told Flynn, then motioned Hopwell and Dashiva to follow. Flynn saluted again, but Rand was already striding away, black mud squelching around his boots. No cheers rose for him in the blustering wind. He could recall when there had been. If that was not one of Luz Theron's memories, if Luz Theron had ever been real. A flash of color just beyond the edge of sight, the feel of someone about to touch him from behind. With an effort, he focused himself. The council tent was a large, red-striped pavilion that had once sat on the plains of Moredo, now pitched in the middle of Rand's encampment, surrounded by 30 paces of bare ground. There were never guards here, unless Rand was meeting with the nobles. Anyone trying to slip in would have been seen instantly by 1,000 prying eyes. 3 banners on tall poles formed a triangle around the tent: the rising sun of Carrion, the 3 crescents of Tyr, and the golden bees of Ilion. And above the crimson roof, higher than the rest, stood the dragon banner and the banner of light. The wind made them all stand out, rippling and snapping, and the tent walls shivered in the gusts. Inside, colorful fringed carpets made a floor, and the only furniture was a huge table, thickly carved and gilded, inlaid with ivory and turquoise. A jumble of maps almost hid the tabletop. Torvald lifted his head from the maps, plainly ready to give the rough side of his tongue to whoever had barged in on him. Close to his middle years and tall beside anyone save Rand or Nihil, he stared coldly down a sharp nose that practically quivered with indignation. The dragon and the sword glistened on his coat collar in the light of the stand lamps. A silk coat, shining black, cut fine enough for a lord. His sword had silver mountings washed with gold, and a glittering red gem capped the hilt. Another gleamed darkly on a finger ring. You could not train men to be weapons without expecting a certain amount of arrogance, yet Rand did not like Torval. But then he had no need of Luz Theron's voice to be suspicious of any man in a black coat. How far did he truly trust even Flynn? Yet he had to lead them. The Ashaman were his making, his responsibility. When Torval saw Rand, he straightened casually and saluted, but his expression barely changed. He had had a sneering mouth the first time Rand ever saw him. "My lord dragon," he said in the accents of Terabon, and he might have been greeting an equal, or being gracious to an inferior. His swaggering bow took in Hopwell and Dashiva as well. "I give congratulations on the conquest of Ilion. A great victory, yes? There would have been wine to greet you, but this young dedicated does not seem to understand orders." In the corner, silver bells on the ends of Narishma's 2 long dark braids made a faint sound as he shifted. He had tanned darkly in the southern sun, but some things about him had not changed. Older than Rand, his face made him seem younger than Hopwell, but the red that rose in his cheeks was anger, not embarrassment. His pride in the new one's sword on his collar was quiet, yet deep. Torval smiled at him, a slow smile, both amused and dangerous. Dashiva laughed, a short bark, and was still.
"What are you doing here, Torval?"
Rand asked roughly. He tossed the dragon scepter and his gauntlets down atop the maps and followed them with his sword belt and scabbarded sword. The maps that Torval had no reason to be studying. No need of Luz Theron's voice. With a shrug, Torval produced a letter from his coat pocket and handed it to Rand.
"The Mihail sent this."
The paper was snowy white and thick, the seal a dragon impressed in a large oval of blue wax that glittered with golden flecks. It might almost have been thought to come from the dragon reborn. Taim did think well of himself.
"The Mihail said to tell you that the tales of Aes Sedai and Murundi with an army, they are true. Rumor says they are rebels against Tarvalin."
Torval's sneer thickened with disbelief.
"But they are marching toward the Black Tower. Soon they may become a danger, yes?"
Rand cracked the magnificent seal to bits between his fingers.
"They are going to Camelin, not the Black Tower, and they're no threat. My orders were clear. Leave Aes Sedai alone unless they come after you."
"But how can you be sure they are not a threat?" Torval persisted. "Perhaps they are coming to Camelin, as you say, but if you are wrong, we'll not know before they attack us."
Torval may be right, Dashiva put in thoughtfully. I can't say I'd trust women who put me in a box, and these haven't sworn any oaths. Or have they?
I said leave them alone!
Rand slapped the tabletop hard, and Hopwell jumped in surprise. Dashiva frowned with irritation before hurriedly smoothing it over, but Rand was not interested in Dashiva's moods. By chance, he was sure it was chance, his hand had come down on the dragon scepter. His arm trembled with the desire to take it up and stab Torval through the heart. No need for Luthaeron at all.
The Ashaman are a weapon to be aimed where I say, not to flutter around like hens every time Taim gets frightened over a handful of Aes Sedai having dinner at the same inn. If I must, I can come back to make myself clearer.
I am sure there is no need of that, Torval said quickly.
At last, something had wiped the wry twist from his mouth. Eyes tight, he spread his hands, close to diffident, very nearly apologetic, and plainly frightened.
The Mihail, he merely wanted you informed. Your orders are read aloud every day at morning directives after the creed.
That's good, then. Rand kept his voice cool, kept a scowl from his face by main effort. It was his precious Mihail the man feared, not the dragon reborn. Afraid Taim would take it amiss if something he had said brought Rand's anger on Taim's head. Because I'll kill any one of you who goes near those women in Murindi. You cut where I direct.
Torval bowed rigidly, murmuring, As you say, my lord dragon.
His teeth were bared in an attempted smile, but his nose was pinched, and he struggled to avoid meeting anyone's eyes while seeming to avoid nothing. Dashiva yelped another laugh, and Hopwill wore a small grin. Narishma was not enjoying Torval's discomfort, though, or paying it attention. He looked at Rand without blinking, as though he sensed deep currents that the rest missed. Most women and no few men thought him just a pretty boy, but those two big eyes sometimes seemed more knowing than any others. Rand pulled his hand from the dragon scepter and smoothed open the letter. His hands did not quite shake. Torval smiled weakly, sourly, noticing nothing. Against the tent wall, Narishma shifted, relaxing. The refreshments arrived then, borne by a stately procession following Borina, a line of Ilioners and Kyrianen and Tyrans in their various liveries. There was a servant bearing a silver tray and pitcher for each kind of wine, and two more with trays of silver mugs for hot punch and spiced wines, and fine-blown goblets for the others. A pink-faced fellow in green and yellow carried a tray on which to do the pouring, and a dark woman in black and gold was there to actually handle the pitchers. There were nuts and candied fruits, cheeses and olives, each sort requiring a serving man or woman. Under Barina's direction, they flowed in a formal dance, bowing, curtsying, one giving way to another as they made their offerings. Accepting spiced wine, Rand hoisted himself onto the edge of the table and sat the steaming mug beside him, untouched as he busied himself with a letter. There was no address, no preamble of any kind. Taim hated giving Rand any sort of title, though he tried to hide the fact.
I have the honor to report that 29 Ashaman, 97 dedicated, and 322 soldiers are now enrolled at the Black Tower. There have been a handful of deserters, unfortunately, whose names have been stricken, but losses in training remain acceptable. I now have as many as 50 recruiting parties in the field at any given time, with the result that 3 or 4 men are added to the rolls almost every day. In a few months, the Black Tower will equal the White, as I said it would. In a year, Tarvalin will tremble at our numbers. I harvested that blackberry bush myself. A small bush and thorny, but a surprising number of berries for the size.
Mazrim Taim, Mihail. Rand grimaced, putting the blackberry bush out of his mind. What had to be done had to be done. The whole world paid a price for his existence. He would die for it, but the whole world paid. There were other things to grimace over anyway. 3 or 4 new men a day? Taim was optimistic. In a few months, at that rate, there would be more men who could channel than Aes Sedai, true, but the newest sister had years of training behind her. and part of that specifically taught how to deal with a man who could channel. He did not want to contemplate any encounter between Ashaman and Aes Sedai who knew what they were facing. Blood and regret could be the only outcome, whatever happened. The Ashaman were not aimed at the White Tower, though, no matter what Taim thought. It was a convenient belief, however, if it made Tar-Valon step warily. An Ashaman only needed to know how to kill. If there were enough to do that at the right place and time, if they lived long enough to, that was all they had been created for. "How many deserters, Torval?" he said quietly. He picked up the wine mug and took a swallow, as if the answer were unimportant. The wine should have been warming, but the ginger and sweet sorrel and mace tasted bitter on his tongue. "How many losses in training?" Torval was recovering himself over the refreshments, rubbing his hands and arching an eyebrow at the choice of wines, making a great show of knowing the best, making a show of lording it. Dashiva had accepted the first offered, and stood glowering into his twisted-stem goblet as though it held swill. Pointing to one of the trays, Torval cocked his head thoughtfully, but he had the words ready on his tongue.
19 deserters so far. The Mahail, he has ordered them killed, whenever they are found, and their heads brought back for examples.
Plucking a bit of glazed pear from the proffered tray, he popped it into his mouth and smiled brightly.
3 heads hang like fruit on the traitor's tree at this moment.
Good, Rand said levelly. Men who ran now could not be trusted not to run later, when lives depended on them standing. And these men could not be allowed to go their own way. Those fellows back on the hills, if they escaped in a body, were less dangerous than one man trained in the Black Tower. The traitor's tree? Taim was a great one for naming things. But men needed the trappings, the symbols and the names, the black coats and the pins, to help hold them together. Until it was time to die. The next time I visit the Black Tower, I want to see every deserter's head. A second piece of candied pear, halfway to Torval's mouth, dropped from his fingers and streaked the front of his fine coat.
It might interfere with recruiting, making that sort of effort, he said slowly. The deserters, they do not announce themselves.
Rand held the other man's gaze until it fell. How many losses in training? He demanded. The sharp-nosed Ashaman hesitated.
How many?
Narishma leaned forward, staring intently at Torval. So did Hopwill. The servants continued their smooth, silent dance, offering their trays to men who no longer saw them. Borina took advantage of Narishma's preoccupation to make sure his silver mug held more hot water than spiced wine. Torval shrugged, too casually.
51, all told. 13 burned out, and 28 dead where they stood. The rest... The Mahail, he adds something to their wine, and they do not wake.
Abruptly his tone turned malicious.
It can come suddenly, at any time.
One man began screaming that spiders were crawling beneath his skin on his second day. He smiled viciously at Narishma and Hopwill, and nearly so at Rand, but it was to the other two he addressed himself, swinging his head between them.
You see... Not to worry if you slide into madness. You'll not hurt yourselves or a soul. You go to sleep.
Forever.
Kinder than gentling, even if we knew how. Kinder than leaving you insane and cut off, yes?
Narishma stared back, taut as a harp string, his mug forgotten in his hand. Hopwill was once more frowning at something only he could see.
Kinder... Rand said in a flat voice, setting the mug back beside him on the table.
Something in the wine.
My soul is black with blood and damned.
It was not a hard thought, not biting or edged. A simple statement of fact.
A mercy any man might wish for, Torval.
Torval's cruel smile faded, and he stood breathing hard. The sums were easy. 1 man in 10 destroyed... 1 man in 50 mad, and more surely to come. Early days yet, and no way till the day you died to know you had beaten the odds. except that the odds would beat you one way or another in the end. Whatever else, Torval stood under that threat, too. Abruptly, Rand became aware of Borina. It took a moment before he recognized the expression on her face, and when he did, he bit back cold words. How dare she feel pity? Did she think Tommen Gaiden could be won without blood? The prophecies of the dragon demanded blood like rain. Leave us, he told her, and she quietly gathered the servants. But she still carried compassion in her eyes as she herded them out. Casting around for a way to change the mood, Rand found nothing. Pity weakened as surely as fear, and they had to be strong. To face what they had to face, they all must be steel. His making, his responsibility. Lost in his own thoughts, Narishim appeared into the steam rising from his wine, and Hopwheel still tried to stare through the side of the tent. Torval cast sideways glances at Rand and struggled to put the scornful twist back on his mouth. Dashiva alone appeared unaffected, with his arms folded, studying Torval as a man might study a horse offered for sale. Into the painfully stretching silence burst a husky, wind-blown young man in black with the sword and dragon on his collar. Of an age with Hopwill, still not old enough to marry most places, Fedwin Moore wore intensity more closely than his shirt. He moved on his toes, and his eyes had the look of a hunting cat that knew itself hunted in turn. He had been different once, and not so long ago. "The Seanchan will move from Ebu Dar soon," he said as he saluted. "They mean to come against Ilion next." Hopwill gave a start and a gasp, jolted out of his dark study. Once again, Dashiva's response was to laugh, mirthlessly this time. Nodding, Rand took up the dragon scepter. After all, he carried it for remembrance. The Seanchan danced to their own tune, not the song he wished for. If Rand received the announcement in silence, Torval did not. Finding his sneer, he raised a contemptuous eyebrow. "Did they tell you all that now?" he said mockingly. "Or have you learned to read minds? Let me tell you something, boy. I have fought against Amadisians and Demani both, and no army takes a city, then packs itself up to march 1,000 miles. More than 1,000 miles. Or do you think they can travel?" Moore met Torval's derision calmly. Or if it unsettled him at all, the only sign he gave was running a thumb down his long sword hilt. "I did talk to some of them. Most were Terra Bonners, and more landing by ship every day, or near enough." Shouldering past Torval to the table, he favored the Terra Bonner with a level look. "All stepping right quick, whenever anybody with a slurring way of speech opened a mouth." The older man opened his, angrily, but the younger pressed on hurriedly to Rand. "They're putting soldiers all along the Venir Mountains. 500, sometimes 1,000 together. All the way to Arun Head already. And they're buying or taking every wagon and cart within 20 leagues of Ebu Dar, and the animals to draw them." "Carts!" Torval exclaimed. "Wagons! Is it that they mean to hold a market fair, do you think? And what fool would march an army through mountains when there are perfectly good roads?" He noticed Rand watching him, and cut off with a small frown, suddenly uncertain. "I told you to stay low, Moore," Rand let anger touch his voice. The young Ashman had to step back as he jumped down from the table. "Not to go asking the Seanchan their plans. To look and stay low."
"I was careful. I didn't wear my pins."
Moore's eyes did not change for Rand, still hunter and hunted in one. He seemed to be boiling inside. Had Rand not known better, he would have thought Moore held the power, struggling to survive Sayadin, even as it gave him life 10 times over. His face seemed to want to sweat.
"If any of the men I talked to knew where they were going next, they didn't say, and I didn't ask. But they were willing to complain over a mug of ale about marching all the time and never standing still. In Ebu Dar, they were soaking up all the ale in the city as fast as they could because they say they have to march again. And they're gathering wagons, just like I said."
That all came out in a rush, and he clamped his teeth at the end as though to trap more words that wanted to fly from his tongue. Smiling suddenly, Rand clapped him on the shoulder. "You did well. The wagons would have been enough, but you did well. Wagons are important," he added, turning to Torval. If an army feeds off the country, it eats what it finds. Or not, if it doesn't. Torval had not flickered an eyelid at hearing of Shanchan and Ebudar. If that tale had reached the Black Tower, why had Taim not mentioned it? Rand hoped his smile did not look a snarl.
It's harder to arrange supply trains, but when you have one, you know there's fodder for the animals and beans for the men. The Shanchan organize everything.
Sorting through the maps, he found the one he wanted and spread it out, waited at one side with his sword, and at the other with the dragon scepter. The coast between Ilion and Ebudar stared up at him, rimmed for most of its length by hills and mountains, dotted with fishing villages and small towns. The Shanchan did organize. Ebudar had been theirs barely more than a week, but the merchants' eyes and ears wrote of repairs well underway on the damage done to the city and its taking, of clean sick houses set up for the ill, of food and work arranged for the poor and those driven from their homes by troubles inland. The streets and the surrounding countryside were patrolled so that no one need fear footpads or bandits, day or night, and while merchants were welcome, smuggling had been cut to a trickle, if not less. Those honest Ilianer merchants had been surprisingly glum about the smuggling. What were the Shanchan organizing now? The others gathered around the table as Rand perused the map. There were roads, hard along the coast, but poor straggling things, marked as little more than cart paths. The broad trade roads lay inland, avoiding the worst of the terrain and the worst of what the Sea of Storms had to offer.
"Men raiding out of those mountains could make passage difficult for anyone trying to use the inland roads," he said finally. "By controlling the mountains, they make the roads safe as a city street."
"You're right, Moore. They are coming to Ilion."
Leaning on his fists, Torval glared at Moore, who had been right when he was wrong. A grievous sin, perhaps, in Torval's book.
"Even so, it will be months before they can trouble you here," he said sullenly. 100 Ashaman? 50, placed in Ilion, could destroy any army in the world before one man crosses the causeways."
"I doubt any army with Damani is destroyed as easily as one kills Aiel, committed to an attack and caught by surprise," Rand said quietly, and Torval stiffened. "Besides, I have to defend all of Ilion, not just the city."
Ignoring the man, Rand traced lines across the map with a finger. Between Arenhead and the city of Ilion lay 100 leagues of open water across the mouth of Cabal Deep, where, ship captains in Ilion said, their longest sounding lines could find no bottom just a mile or so from the shore. The waves there could overturn ships as they surged north to pound the coast with breakers 15 paces high. In this weather, it would be worse. Marching around the deep was a route of 200 leagues to reach the city, even keeping to the shortest ways. But if the Shanchan pressed on from Arenhead, they could reach the border in 2 weeks despite the rainstorms. Maybe less. Better to fight where he chose, not where they did. His finger slid along the south coast of Altara, along the Venir Range, until the mountains dwindled to hills short of Ebudar. 500 here, 1,000 there. A tantalizing string of beads dropped along the mountains. A sharp rap might roll them back to Ebudar, might even pen them there while they tried to figure out what he was up to. Or...
"There was something else," Moore said abruptly, rushing again. "There was talk about some sort of Aes Sedai weapon. I found where it was used, a few miles from the city. The ground was all burned over, seared clean in the middle, a good 300 paces wide or more, and ruined orchards further. The sand was melted to sheets of glass. Sidin was worst there."
Torval waved a hand at him dismissively.
"There could have been Aes Sedai near when the city fell, yes? Or maybe the Shanchan themselves did it. One sister with an Angreal could..."
Rand cut in.
"What do you mean, Sayadin was worst there?"
Dashiva moved, eyeing Moore oddly, reaching as though to seize the young man. Rand fended him off roughly.
"What do you mean, Moore?"
Moore stared, mouth shut tight, running his thumb up and down the length of his sword hilt. The heat inside of him seemed ready to burst. There really was sweat beading on his face now.
"Sayadin was... strange, he said hoarsely.
His words came in rapid bursts.
Worst there. I could feel it. In the air all around me, but strange everywhere around Ebu Dar. And even 100 miles away. I had to fight it. Not like always. Different. Like it was alive. Sometimes it didn't want to do what I wanted. Sometimes it did something else. It did. I'm not mad, it did.
The wind gusted, howling for a moment, shivering and snapping the tent walls, and Moore fell silent. Narishma's bells chimed at a jerk of his head, then were still.
That isn't possible, Dashiva muttered into the silence, but nearly under his breath. It is not possible.
Who knows what's possible, Rand said. I don't. Do you?
Dashiva's head came up in surprise, but Rand turned to Moore, moderating his tone.
Don't worry, man.
Not a mild tone, he could not manage that. Yet heartening, he hoped. His making is responsibility.
You'll be with me to the last battle. I promise it.
The young man nodded and scrubbed at his face with his hand as though surprised to find it damp, but he glanced at Torval, who had gone as still as stone. Did Moore know about the wine? It was a mercy, given the alternatives. A small and bitter mercy. Rand picked up Taim's missive, folded the page, and thrust it into his coat pocket. 1 in 50 mad already, and more to come. Was Moore next? Dashiva was surely close. Hopwill's stares took on a new meaning, and even Narishma's habitual quiet. Madness did not always mean screaming about spiders. He had asked once, warily, where he knew the answers would be true, how to cleanse the taint from Saidin, and got a riddle for answer. Herod Fell had claimed the riddle stated, sound principles in both high philosophy and natural philosophy. But he had not seen any way to apply it to the problem at hand. Had Fell been killed because he might have puzzled out the riddle? Rand had a hint at the answer, or thought he might. A guess that could be disastrously wrong. Hints and riddles were not answers. Yet he had to do something. If the taint was not cleansed somehow, Tarmon Gaydon might find a world already ruined by madmen. What had to be done, had to be done.
That would be wondrous, Torval said in a near whisper. But how could anyone short of the Creator or...
He trailed off uneasily. Rand had not realized he had spoken any of his thoughts aloud. Narishma's eyes and Moore's and Hopwell's belonged in one face, shining with sudden hope. Dashiva looked poleaxed. Rand hoped he had not said too much. Some secrets had to be kept, including what he would do next. In short order, Hopwell was running for his horse to ride to the ridge with orders for the nobles, Moore and Dashiva to find Flynn and the other Ashaman, and Torval was striding off to travel back to the Black Tower with commands for Taim. Narishma was last, and thinking of Aes Sedai and Shaun Chan and weapons, Rand sent him away as well, with careful instructions that made the young man's mouth tighten.
Speak to no one, Rand finished softly, gripping Narishma's arm hard. And don't fail me. Not by a hair.
I won't fail, Narishma said, unblinking. With a quick salute, he was gone too.
Dangerous, a voice whispered in Rand's head. Oh, yes, very dangerous. Maybe too dangerous. But it might work. It might. In any event, you must kill Torval now. You must.
Wireman entered the council tent, shouldering aside Gregorin and Tolmeran, trying to shoulder aside Rosanna and Samaradrid, the lot of them eager to tell Rand that the men in the trees had decided wisely after all. They found him laughing till tears rolled down his face. Luz Theron had come back. Or else he really was mad already. Either way, it was reason to laugh.